It's Ideasphere with author Stephanie Westland, Field Exercised.
Eco-psychologist Andy Fisher says the body is capable of recognizing when it's in the presence of what it needs. When I'm hungry, my body's implying food, so you feel the pangs of hunger. And when someone is traumatized, the body then is implying that it needs these other experiences to restore a sense of calm, of peace, and really of light.
Stephanie Westland holds a PhD in peace and conflict studies. For the past 5 years, she's been researching the lives of war veterans, specifically how they moved through their mental and physical pain toward recovery. And she continues to be inspired by their courage and personal resolve. Hello, I'm Guy Rathbun. Welcome to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices. Westland's new book is Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. In her work, she shares stories of how several soldiers have found a deep and far-reaching connection between nature and health. But Field Exercises moves much deeper by offering hope for veterans searching for methods to ease the transition to civilian life and recover from military stress and trauma. Ms. Westland, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you for having me.
Your work, I would think, is actually universal. We could all use more nature around us, gardening in particular. But just being part of the natural surroundings is vital. You found in your last 5 years of research the benefits provided by those experiencing post-traumatic stress syndrome is vital. Returning war veterans.
Yes, absolutely. I think that most of us, I do think, really have this intuitive sense that we feel well when we go outdoors. And that was one of the things that really surprised me when I was doing this research and writing the book, was as I was talking to people, they weren't surprised. Yeah. They would say, well, of course, that makes sense. And so when I was doing my PhD research in peace and conflict studies, I started to come across all these stress-injured veterans who were finding relief in the outdoors. And they were saying things like, you know, I feel better when I'm gardening or I'm farming or, you know, riding horses or spending time with my dog and hiking, canoeing, fishing, any kind of activities that are really outdoors and away from the urban environment often, although it can be, you know, spending time in an urban park or even in your backyard. But one of the things they kept saying to me was that, you know, we've been finding this and we want to institute programs based on this. But whenever we go to find funding for these nature-based programs, the funders keep saying, you know, there's no research or there's no proof. And for me, I had already started to do some of the research into the human nature relationship. So I knew that there was research in a wide variety of disciplines in areas like neuroscience and epidemiology and education, medicine even, that was supporting basically what these veterans were saying. And to me, it made sense really to bring the two together and try to really bring it into a wider audience. I tried to bring it in an accessible way, both the research and then the veteran stories as well.
And you went back in your research and landed upon a story of a World War I veteran who was writing about his experiences in those early years?
Yeah, actually, it was his biographer that wrote about his experiences. And what was happening was that this World War I veteran was suffering probably from, at the time, what would be called shell shock, but there weren't really a ton of words or understanding around it at that point. And they found that when he spent time canoeing, this long sort of canoe trip through the wilderness, that he came back and he had recovered in a sense from his experiences. So I think it's really important when I use the word recovery and healing, though, to point out that injuries like post-traumatic stress, for example, they tend to be lifetime injuries. So what I'm really talking about is that veterans are finding a way to really to support and to find relief through these types of activities. So they're not necessarily being cured, but they are finding connections into life in a sense.
Well, yes. In the case of the World War I veteran just mentioned, he discovered that By getting back to nature through gardening, he was connecting within himself.
Yes, absolutely. And that's actually a really interesting point, because there was garden therapy was used with shell-shocked veterans in World War I. And a lot of soldiers in World War I, this comes out of a research done by Kenneth Halpend, they were actually planting gardens right in their trenches. And what Kenneth Halpend said is that this really connected them into life. It gave them a positive sort of nurturing benefit, which I think is what veterans are still finding today.
You mention that there's no funding for these programs since there isn't the research available to warrant that funding. However, one young fellow coming back from a war overseas set up a nonprofit in which he was able to put together greenhouses. He wishes to expand it further. So he's looking at farming and other possibilities.
Sure. Are we talking about Nathan Lewis?
Yes. Or yes.
Nathan Lewis. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is, some veterans are able to find funding. And there are organizations such as the Farmer Veteran Coalition that are helping. I think they've helped over 1,000 veterans move into farming across the United States. There is nonprofit funding available to some extent. But I think overall, if you take this to the bigger powers that be, it's often difficult to get money at those levels, at the big levels.
Sure,
so,
sure.
In terms of Nathan's story in particular, they just got together and made he and a group of other veterans got together and made a small nonprofit called the Veteran Sanctuary. And it includes both a garden and then a writing group. And they also make paper out of their combat uniforms.
That's quite a story. What you find in your work, once again, the universality of it, I couldn't help thinking how this might work in the prison system and elsewhere, working with those who are suffering from, well, however we want to define it. In many cases, those incarcerated just don't recognize the world outside themselves.
Well, I think already in the 1960s, there was a psychoanalyst called Harold Searles, and he was writing about this. He said, you know, we've considered nature to be irrelevant to human health for quite some time. And he was working specifically with schizophrenic patients, but he said, we look at our health as though human life were lived in a vacuum, as though we don't interact with everything that's around us. And so for me, what's really interesting is all of these studies in green care are coming out, and they're actually saying some of the main benefits for any of us are really a sense of social connection and belonging to a wider community. Things like self-esteem and confidence increases, and people's anxiety decreases, mood increases. So there are just so many benefits of this type of activity. And for most of human history, our survival really depended on interacting not only with the other creatures on the earth, but with the earth itself. So a lot of the researchers that are working in this area, and there's many coming at it from different angles, but they all sort of are talking about how there's this deep ecological instinct that's rooted in the human psyche. And so for any of us, really, it's of benefit. And I know even for myself, I have changed my own parenting as a result of doing this kind of research and writing this book.
Field exercises, how veterans are healing themselves through farming and outdoor activities, a new book written by Stephanie Westland. Stephanie, do you have a blog, website, or anything else you'd recommend for folks to research for more information?
I have my own field exercises website, so that's just fieldexercises.com. There's also actually been a really well-done film that just came out in the spring called Terra Firma. That's T-E-R-R-A, Firma, F-I-R-M-A. And I believe the website is terrafirmafilm.com.
All right. We'll have that posted at Public Radio Exchange, where you can hear the program in its entirety in the event you've tuned in late. prx.org, or you can contact me If you have any questions, rathbunproductions@gmail.com. You can also hear this program at National Public Radio's home site under podcasts, npr.org. A whole lot of alphabet soup with that, but you can always reach me at the email address mentioned before. Something we were talking about that strikes me as, well, it should be common knowledge, but then we look back and easily think it may be flawed. How good we feel when we complete a task, any task, you name it, and then look back at it. Then how much more valuable that is when it's gardening or any work in the outdoors, close to nature.
Yeah, one of the interesting interviews that I did was with Tia Christopher, who was at the Farmer Veteran Coalition. And I love what she said. And so I'm just going to read to you her quote from her. And she said that,
yes,
we found that when veterans can follow a plant cycle, when they prepare the earth, they plant the seed, they nurture it, harvest it, and they eat it or they sell it, that process in itself is healing. And so Tia, she talked about farming as an alternative therapy that isn't therapy. And there's so much interesting research, for example, around, you know, there's a strain of bacteria that's being found in the soil that produces antidepressant-like effects. So basically what it's doing is it's triggering the neurons in our brains to produce serotonin. And serotonin is a mood regulator. And so some of the researchers who've been working on this research, I love what they said. They said, it really makes us think that we should all just be playing in the dirt a little more often.
Indeed, true.
There was also research done with nursing home residents, and the researchers compared a group that was able to get into the garden often and with a group that was only spending time indoors. And they found that those who were spending time in the garden both had lower levels of anxiety as well as a positive mood. And then they actually tested their cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And they found that cortisol levels for these garden participants was 2.5 times lower than that of those who just spent time indoors.
We seem to be coming full circle now and understanding the immense importance of this. And there is something else you bring in that's critical, and that is our connection with animals. But before we discuss that, though, let's turn to a study that you became aware of very early in your research. I'm thinking of the rats, those raised in differing environments. One, exposed only to the plastic world, that is, their world was some form of plasticization, and the other to natural surroundings. The most interesting outcome was the way the two groups socialized afterwards.
Yeah, so this is research that's being done by Kelly Lambert, who's a neuroscientist. And it was actually her students who suggested doing this research. And so one of the things that they're often testing when they're looking at rats is cognitive behavior. And so that's how smart they are. So they tested both what they called them, the city rats and the country rats. So the city, yes, rats were the ones in the plastic sort of standard neuroscience experiment world. And then the country rats were those that had, you know, small pebbles and logs and sticks and leaves to move around and those sorts of things. And so there was very little difference in how smart they were. But where they did find a difference was in their emotional resilience. And Dr. Lambert said that they were finding the animals in these natural environments were bolder, and they had their stress hormones, again, coming back to that cortisol, was at a healthier level. And she takes it basically to say, you know, our country rats are just a little more emotionally stable, and that this applies then to the wider human sphere of things as well, in that she really believes that all of this artificial stimuli that surrounds us today is causing a lot of us to lose our emotional edge.
It is striking how much of a difference that can make. So now let's move into the arena you spend a good deal of time researching and studying. How much of a difference an animal can make to our lives, whether it's a dog, a cat, or a horse. Our communication with animals can have the same effect of creating a social surrounding, serotonin, companionship, or more, even though it's an animal we don't define, at least in conventional wisdom, as having the ability to talk with us.
Yeah, and one of the things that I found actually specifically with veterans, and I'll come back to some of the animal research, but with veterans, you know, a lot of veterans who are suffering from stress injuries like post-traumatic stress have difficulties connecting into the human world, and they often feel very socially isolated. And two of the veterans in the book talked specifically about their relationships with dogs and horses, and that even when it was difficult for them, you know, they were in the pits of despair, that they were able to connect with animals, that they still were able to make positive relationships. And so that really is supported by the research with animals. For example, there's a study that dog owners are less likely to die within a year of a heart attack than those who don't have a dog. And part of this, they think, is because of the social connection with that animal. There's also a story in the book about a group called Canpraxis, which is doing equine-based learning with veterans, and how really a horse is able to perhaps teach veterans things that, you know, they can't find from their human relationships. And so when they spend time with a horse in a round pen, for example, if that horse starts to run away or it swishes its tail, it's actually telling the veteran that, you know, hey, I'm a bit scared of you. And if they're able to sort of drop their emotions, and the horse will actually often come and approach them. So one of the veterans in the book, he has an amazing story. His name is Christian McEachern, and he was really struggling with post-traumatic stress after being involved in a peacekeeping mission, and he continues to struggle. But he was given a horse maybe about 8 years after he was first diagnosed, and this was an ex-race horse, and the name was Sozo, which is significant because the name Sozo means to heal. And Christian started connecting with this horse. He'd go visit this horse every day. And eventually they sort of developed a bond and a relationship that was really healing for both of them. And he realized that when he's with horses, he really needs to take all of his emotional baggage and leave it at the gate. And so for him, even since the book came out, he's been moving on, and he's offering equine first aid courses for other people in the community as well as for veterans.
It's also his love of animals, and he says this replaces people and his need for companionship.
Often he has felt that his animals have replaced people. I think he's been able to move into a more comfortable relationship, at least with some people more recently, but at times when he's really struggling with those human relationships, his dogs and his horses have become important for him. I mean, really, if he looks back, a lot of veterans struggle with thoughts of suicide and things like that. And he says, you know, the reason I'm here today is because of my dog. I didn't want to leave him behind.
The book we're talking about is Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activity, Stephanie Westland. Check out our website at fieldexercises.com and the film she mentioned, Terra Firma, that website, terrafirmafilm.com. This is Ideasphere. I'm Guy Rothbun. We'll be right back. We're back with Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices with researcher and author Stephanie Westland. Her book, Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities. We were talking just a moment ago about animals in our lives, how important they are, and nature in general. Yet many of us overlook their importance. We've become isolated. Frequently, we sit in front of the computers, as I'm doing now, spending time on our laptops and iPhones, ignoring activities around us. The terminals we relate to keep us preoccupied and distant from the outside world. I bring this up only because in your work, peace and conflict is what you specialize in, you're seeing some changes that have taken place in the way people relate to the environment. Perhaps we can take it just a step beyond and say, or ask, could this have relevance to our increased violence that's happening in this country?
Well, you know, that's actually a really interesting point, because in some ways that's how I came to do this research with veterans, is that I was first, as I was studying my coursework for my PhD in peace and conflict studies, I began to notice that the context of many turning points and changed relationships during peace processes. And so some of the examples that I looked at were the Oslo Accord. You'll remember that famous handshake on the White House lawn between Yes. Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin in 1993. Well, the negotiations that led up to that handshake were held in Norway by lower level officials. But they didn't spend time, you know, we typically think of peace negotiations as happening around a table in sort of this windowless room. But really, those negotiators spent a lot of time walking in the woods together, along lakes, at fjords. And really, the points when they had moments of change in their relationship, when they began to become more human to one another, these happened outside. And if you think about Camp David in Maryland, it's in the mountains, it's surrounded by trees. And there was, you know, the negotiations in the 1970s between Jimmy Carter and Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat. And a lot of those happened outdoors. They weren't happening in these, you know, quiet rooms. And so for me, while I was looking at that, that's when I also came to the veterans. And so I decided, because veterans are this, you know, often a marginalized population whose voices aren't heard, and I would like them to be heard, that's Yes. where I focus my research. But at the same time, if I was going to do another PhD, I would probably actually focus it on these other kind of conflict relationships.
I'd like to give you the opportunity to talk about any single experience you had in researching this book that you feel needs to be shared. We've talked about Christian and Nathan, but is there something specific that comes to mind that we shouldn't overlook?
I think the story of Chris Brown is really compelling. Christopher Brown was 22 when he came home from the Marines, and he had done two tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. And he was suffering the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. And his counselor said, you know, why don't you try growing something? You know, the counselor was trying to help him figure out how to connect back into life and with himself and his community. And so what he ended up doing, he was living in an apartment at the time. And so he put this 1x2 foot garden box on his apartment balcony. And he decided to grow 4 plants. And I don't know what all 4 plants were, but one of them was mint. And for anyone who's ever grown mint, they probably can guess what happened to Chris's garden box. It got overtaken by the mint because it's invasive. And so this gave him really an interesting place, though. He talks about how it was a way to focus his thoughts and energies. So he was no longer focusing on his emotions and the difficulties that he was having, but he was starting to research, you know, what do plants need to grow and what could I do? And at the same time, he and his wife were drinking mint tea every day. And so then when they moved into a house with a backyard, he put in a 5x12 foot raised bed. And the thing that he said to me was, you know, each year I've been feeling better, or each year the garden's gotten better and I've been able to produce more food out of it. And then each year I've been feeling better as far as my PTSD symptoms go too. And what Chris is doing today is he actually is the director of an organization called Growing Veterans, which is in Washington State. And they are growing food both for a community-supported agriculture program, but they're also basically working to get more veterans involved in farming and build this small network of farms that will hire veterans. And, you know, he thinks he's really a proponent that growing food for other people and focusing on the sort of nurturing relationship of with plants and being able to have to serve communities in meaningful ways is a really important activity for veterans who are transitioning back to civilian life.
Let's close on the thought of biophilia and eco-psychology. It's critical to have the love of life. If we have that, we enjoy it.
Absolutely. And in eco-psychology in particular, it involves this idea that there's this ecological unconscious, and that I love what Andy Fisher, who's an eco-psychologist and a psychotherapist, he says, you know, genuine sanity is grounded in the reality of the natural world. And the way he talks about it is when I was talking to him about some of the stories of the veterans that I had spoken with, he says, you know, that's very interesting because the body is capable of recognizing when it's in the presence of what it needs. And so he says, you know, when I'm hungry, my body's implying food. So you feel the pangs of hunger. And when someone is traumatized, the body then is implying that it needs these other experiences to restore a sense of calm, of peace, and really of life. And so he looked at, you know, these veterans saying, I'm feeling better in these instances. And he says, you know, that's what their bodies, in a sense, are implying, that they need these experiences to complete their trauma experience, in a sense. In the chapter by Nathan Lewis in the book, he talks about how, you know, a lot of veterans are looking for opportunities to nurture. And I love what he says in terms of anything that provides that anchor into life is important. And that metaphor of an anchor into life can apply to any population, whether it's people living in a prison environment or older adults in a nursing home or children in schoolyards or really any of us coping with stress on a daily level, those kind of things.
Yes, what he calls the organism environmental field.
Right, that really one of the important things he talks about is that even for therapists, it actually might show that there's a benefit in stepping outside of the therapy room into a wider area, and that this might actually be very important in healing for any of us.
It's so important you've done this research, and I do admire what you've accomplished. And I thank you so very much for the time you've given us to express these ideas.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Field Exercises, How Veterans Are Healing Themselves Through Farming and Outdoor Activities, author Stephanie Westland. Check out our website at fieldexercises.com. If you have any thoughts, questions, suggestions, or comments about these broadcasts of Ideasphere, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. This program is a distribution of Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. For Ideasphere, I'm Guy Rathbun.